Well, thank you, Nikki. I really appreciate that. And thank you for the warm welcome. Before I get started on today's talk, I just want to touch a little bit on Gary's reading. A week after the shooting in Florida, I was at the convention down in Irvine, and I got a call from the school saying that there was a potential threat at Pauley High School, where my son is. And I was too far away to do anything except pray. So I think I certainly felt better after I'd prayed, but I think we need to remember that. I think we need to remember that the solution, we can talk about politics, but the solution is really in our hearts. The solution is to let love work, because love is always, always the answer. So however we support and whatever side we're on, you know, I think that it's just important to remember that we love our children, we love each other, and as I said, love is always the answer. So we have it up on the slide. All right. It's a little hard to see from here. Okay. So anyway, you know, I am so, so happy to be here today. I really am. And as Nikki said, I'm a longtime member of Namaste. I was a member here for 17 years. And and so, you know, standing here, I'm having a little feeling of deja vu. And the truth is, you know, this was my spiritual home for a long time. And so what this means is I feel like I've come home. I'm visiting home. And so it's really good to be here. Thank you for inviting me back. And so today's talk title is Eclectic Elected. And so I'm going to be asking Gary, he's been gracious enough to say he'll click through my slides for me. So Eclectic Elected, the reason I wanted to talk about being more eclectic in our lives is because the world has become possibly, Gary, a little polarized, right? And what that means to me is, you know, if you listen to what's on the news radio, talk radio, watch TV, the news on TV, or maybe read things on Facebook, what we constantly are hearing about is that people want more sameness. It just means that I want to stand down at the South Pole of the world, and I want the people who look like me and talk like me and speak like me and think like me and have my issues and, most importantly, have the solutions to my issues that I agree with. And we're all going to be on the South Pole, and everybody else is going to be on the North Pole, or the North Pole and the South Pole. It doesn't matter which pole. But I don't really think that that's the truth of how we really want to live our lives. I think that we actually want to be more eclectic than that. And so I'm going to talk today about being eclectic. What does that look like? How does that feel? How can we encourage people around us to be more eclectic by bringing in people that are more eclectic? So that's really what we're going to talk about today. And so click, I wanted to talk a little bit about what does it mean to be eclectic. Well, I love a show called Project Runway. Anybody watch that one? All right, well, if you haven't seen it, it's like American Idol from the perspective that, you know, it's a contest, somebody wins, and it's for like 10 weeks. And instead of singers, though, it's designers, clothes designers. So every week you get to watch these clothes designers as they make different clothes based on the challenge of the week. And what I've noticed in watching that show is that some of the designers, you look at their stuff week after week after week, and even though one week it's a jumpsuit and the next week it's a ball dress, it looks the same, right? It's the same type of clothes. And then there are other people where it's all different. You know, they're making these clothes, and everything has a different flair to it and different design to it. And so I was looking out on the internet, and I was looking for clothes designers, and I came across this guy, Giambattista Balle from Italy. And I looked at his website, and I found that, holy schmoly, look at all these designs. And they're all different. They're all unique, and the models are all different looking. And that is eclectic to me. Click. And so this is a picture of the designer, and he says on his website something I really liked about being eclectic. He says, I like things that are kind of eclectic when one thing doesn't go with another. That's why I love Rome. The town itself is that way. It's where fascist architecture meets classic Renaissance, where the ancient bangs up against the contemporary. It has a touch of everything. And if you've been to Rome, I think you would agree with that statement. And it works. That eclecticism works in Rome, and I think it can work in all sorts of places. But why do I think we need to be more eclectic? What is it that would drive me as a minister to say that? Well, in Science of Mind, we believe that our job, quote unquote, what we're supposed to do in this life is we are supposed to align ourselves with God. And I say God is eclectic. And here's what I say, why I say that. Now, we talk a lot about the oneness that God is. The oneness that God is that, you know, everything that we see, everything that we touch, everything that we feel, all of the universe is in the oneness that God is. But the oneness that God is not the sameness that God is, right? Even where we label things as the same, when you look at them closely, they're not the same. For instance, snow is snow, right? Except when you go look at those little snowflakes, every last one of them is different. And I grew up in Alaska. I've seen a lot of snowflakes. It boggles my mind. And then, you know, there's gorillas and chimpanzees. And we used to think they were all the same until Diane Fossey and Jane Goodall went out and they lived with those guys. And they named them because every last one of them is unique. They're all individual. And so I would say that God is eclectic. Except Joanne Bourgeois, who some of you I know, she was the director of practitioners here for many years. She would slap my hand and say, God is not eclectic. God is the thing itself. So God is eclecticness. Thank you, Joanne. I'll go along with that. So click, Gary. So then, why is it that we're eclectic? Well, if you look over here, we've got this brain over here. And yes, this is a box of 8-track cassettes. Yeah. So for those of you who remember the 70s, that was that thing that you used to take and you used to put it in your car, in your 8-track player in your car, in order to get some music. Yeah, get rocking on that music. Well, the reason I put this up here is, if you guys remember, if you've been around for a while, a couple of years ago in our prosperity program here at Namaste, we were using a book called Finding Zero. And in that book, it said that our brain, Our subconscious brain receives 2 million bits of information from our senses, our eyes, our taste, our smell, all those senses that we have, 2 million bits of information per second. And our conscious mind receives 134 of those per second. So out of that, if you do the math, it's 0.0067% of the information that you're taking in through your senses are you actually conscious of. Well, what happens to the rest of it? Well, your brain just filters it away. And how does it choose the 134 pieces of information that you're going to see, that you're going to be aware of? Well, it plays the 8 tracks over there. It goes, oh, I recognize that. I'm going to stick in this 8-track so that you see a little bit of something and then all of a sudden it's an orange, right? Now, the thing is your brain then has a tendency to be like antibodies. You work like antibodies, which is, oh, that's me. I'm going to let it go through. Oh, it's not me. I send the antibodies over and reject it. But we do have a solution. We have the ability, click, to be more like Jesus. Now, this is what I mean by that. We have the ability to live in this now moment, this moment right now, and to decide what is the information that we're going to have come through. And we can always also create new 8-track tapes, because those 8-track tapes that we have that were installed in us, well, they were installed by us, really, by the conscious thoughts that we thought over and over and over again. Those were what got put onto those 8-track tapes. And the thoughts that we say over and over again, they're at the top of the heap. They're the easy ones to find. They're the ones that get plugged in. Now, if you use what we know of as affirmations, which are just the 3 P's, personal, positive, present tense, statements like, I am the love that God is. Okay? If you think that, if you've been having a problem in your life where you've been a little ornery, well, I can change that. I can change that by using affirmations to create a new 8-track tape, right? Now, the other thing I wanted to say about eclecticism in particular is that in religious science, we say that Jesus Christ is the great teacher. He is the great example, not the great exception, right? Now, what that means is that we believe that Jesus was the person that we know of that most aligned his life with what the principle of God is. He definitely knew what love was. There's no doubt about that. And one other thing I'd like to point out, today is Palm Sunday in the Christian faith, which is a recognition of the day that Jesus went into Jerusalem. Now, Jesus had a choice on that day. He had a choice to align himself with the Pharisees, the people in power, or to align himself with the people in need. And what I know of Jesus is that he aligned himself with the people who are less fortunate, the people who don't have, the people who are commoners, the people that were, he aligned himself with the lepers, he aligned himself with the prostitutes, he aligned himself with every person that had been pushed away. And what I'm saying is that if we want to be eclectic, the way Jesus was eclectic, that's what we need to do also. Right? We need to pull in all the unwanted, Anybody who's on the margins, that's who we pull in. So, click. I want to tell you a little bit about a story. So we have over here, we have Superman, and it says, am I a hero? Well, I thought about Superman and a hero because I was listening to a story in NPR, and in that story, it was a story about young Muslim men and whether or not they were becoming radicalized. And first and foremost, I want to say this. I want to say it doesn't matter that they were young Muslim men, because this story could have been very much about young white poor men and whether or not they're being radicalized. It'd be the same answer, right? So, but this particular story was about young Muslim men, and what they found in their research was that the young Muslim men who felt like they were heroes in their culture didn't become radicalized. It was the young men who were marginalized and pushed away from society. Those were the young men who became radicalized, and they had a term for it. They said the young men who felt like they could be heroes where they were, where they stood, where they lived, those young men were not radicalized. And if they couldn't be a hero, they had a potential to be. Now, I started thinking, I'm like, well, what the heck does it mean to be a hero? Now, you should have gotten one of these just as a takeaway. And by the way, I did this late last night, and I printed it on the wrong side. It's a label, but it's the wrong side of the label, so you can't actually stick it anywhere. But but you can take it home and as a mnemonic for what the talk was today. And so click, Carrie. And so I did make a mnemonic out of hero, and the H stands for herd, right? Now, if I am a hero, if I'm Superman, and I speak, do you think you listen? I think so, right? And so a hero, when they're speaking, they're being heard. People are interested in what they're saying. And then click, E is for engaged. Now, if the citizens of Metropolis were waking up one Sunday morning and an alien just parked their spaceship on the central lawn, don't you think that they would go to Superman and go, hey, what do you think we should do about this thing over here? So a hero not only is heard when they speak, but they are engaged in the process, right? People come to them and they engage them. And then click. R is for respected. Now, when I speak, if I'm a hero, what that means is that you listen to me. You may not agree with what I'm saying, and that's perfectly okay, because it takes a lot of opinions to get to the right answer. But you respect me for what I say and who I am. And then the most important one to me is click, being original. Being original. You allow me to be original, which just means that you're not stuffing me in the box with the other couple of million people and kicking it to the curb and being done with me. You allow me to be who I am, just like in the Justice League. It's not just Superman in the Justice League, because Superman has great... He's Man of Steel. He's pretty gosh darn good. Yeah. But he's also got a problem with kryptonite, right? So in the Justice League, it's Superman, it's Wonder Woman, it's Aquaman, it's Flash, and somebody else. Oh, Batman. Okay, so that just means that it is important with our heroes that we allow a huge diversity. We like our heroes to be eclectic. because the more eclectic they are, the better the solution is when you come out. Click. So if you're not a hero, then what are you? Well, you're the opposite of a hero. You're disengaged, unheard, disrespected, and stereotyped, right? Stereotyped is the important one on there, I think. So, click. So I wanted to talk a little bit about an example of creating heroes. And I was on the internet again, and I was looking around at this video called The Barrio de Paz. And it's about a woman who works in Ecuador with gangs. And they have a lot of problems with gangs in Ecuador, a lot of violence. But she says, and this is the quote that caught my eye, she says, "Everything in society tells us to distrust others. I think it's the other way around. We need to profoundly trust in those around us, in their potential, and in who they are." Trust in who they are. And so click. She works with gang members like this. And what she says is that those young men and those young women that belong to those gangs, she says they're just a mirror of the society that's in that they live in. And that if their society wasn't built to have all those gang members, it wouldn't have them. So there's something in the society, not something intrinsically wrong with the kids. And she says that those gang members, on top of that, they've been expelled from society. Their families are broken. The society that they're supposed to live in doesn't want them. And so what do? They band together in order to satisfy their needs. And the needs that they have are to be loved, to have unity, to have solidarity. Those are human needs. They're not needs that are special to these kids. They're the same needs every last one of us has. So, click. The answer that she's come up with is, she says, the opposite of violence is not nonviolence. It is power. It's a little crazy, isn't it? You walk into a place where the problem is violence, and what you want to do is you want to give more power to these folks. But here's how it's worked. Through her organization, Barrio de Paz, Barrio of Peace, she gets different gangs to come together. She gives them resources. She empowers them. She has them work in teams where the different gangs are all working together. And then she says, through the power of service, by them being able to help people in their own community, those gangs change. They're no longer interested in violence. They're interested in doing good. She says, the power to give life is the opposite of the power to take life. So she has them engaged in giving life. And one more click. She says something in there that really, really touched me. She says, flowers don't grow from diamonds. Flowers, they grow from mud. I don't know about you, but my childhood was not a field of diamonds. And if yours was, I more power. You know, I love that. But I think for those of us who understand that there's a lot of fertilizer in that mud. And that fertilizer creates strong flowers, if you let it. If you let that mud be fertilizer for those flowers, it grows. And so I think it's our job to go out and spread that and to know that. Now, people, when I talk about this, people will always come up to me and they'll go, but Scott, these problems, gang violence, what can I do about that? And I agree. It's a huge problem. But this teaching, this philosophy, Science of Mind philosophy, tells us that we don't necessarily have to be the person like her that's working directly with the gangs. But what we are called to do is we are called to know love more personally. Because we create from that place of what we know to be true. And so Ernest Holmes says we are powerful creators. Powerful creators. And so as we know the life and the power and the presence that God is more fully, more completely as the truth of our lives, and we know that we are the life that God is as love, as peace, as joy, and as we try to make people heroes in our own community, we don't have to be out there, although it's nice to be out there, we can be right here. We can practice love right here. We can practice making people heroes right here. And if we do that here, then the way it all works is we create heroes out there too. So I just want to leave us, one more click, Gary, with a statement by Ernest Holmes where he says, the divine person within us has, in a sense, one hand placed in the hand of God and the other hand outstretched to humanity. For the person who finds himself in God will find God in others. So what I'd like you to do this coming week, if you would like to, is to find God more fully, more completely in yourself, and then look for God in others. Thank you, and namaste. So let's just pray. And today I'm going to just pray to know that eclecticness that God is, to know that peace and that joy that God is right here, right now. And so I drop down inside of myself to that place that knows that it knows that it knows. I drop down inside of myself to that place that lies open to the infinite. I drop down inside of myself to that place that touches God at the very core, the very center of my being. And it's from this place of knowingness that I know absolutely, I can see fully, I can see clearly because the veil is separated. And there is no separation. And I see the love that God is. I know the love that God is. And the peace that God is. And the oneness and the power and the splendor that God is. And as I know that to be the truth of God, I know it to be the truth of myself, I know it to be the truth of each person here, I know it to be the truth of this community, and I know it to be the truth of everyone who lives in this world of 7 billion souls. I know that this life, this power, this presence, it is God. It is that love that animates each one of us. It is that peace that holds us in its arms. It is that joy that just percolates through our lives. And so it's from that place of knowingness that I speak my word today as the truth of each person here. I know absolutely that the life and the power and the presence that God is love, moves through us and as us. With ease and with joy, we come together with a mighty, mighty heart. We come together in every relationship that we have, knowing that life, that power, that presence is there in that relationship, that it is there in each person that we meet, that it is there in the love that we feel for the disadvantaged, for the unfortunate, for the people whose society doesn't always put out a hand. I know that love is there for our children and our schools. I know that love is there for every person. No matter what that situation is in that person's life in this moment, the love that God is always there. It's always creative. It is always moving through us. And it is always spiraling us up because that is the motive force that is God. And so I just allow myself for and through and as each person to just fall back into the peace that God is. Into the safety that peace represents, into that love and safety that is a net that enwraps and folds us, each and every one. And for knowing this truth of each person today as the love that God is, I just give thanks, and I release this prayer into the law, knowing that it's already fulfilled in the mind God is, and I say life and God are good and very good. And together we say, and so it is. Amen.